New research confirms what 1 in 9 New Zealanders who own a dog already know, that dog ownership can be good for your heart. So they're good for us, but are we good for them? Behavioural issues account for 80% of dogs who are put down before the age of 3. And animal behaviourist Mark Vetti says getting it right with puppies can avoid bad behaviour in older dogs. He's taught dogs to fly small planes. He trained the Toyota Bugger dog, and now he has a new comprehensive guide to puppy training. It's called Puppy Zen, 8 weeks to train your pup and create a lifelong bond. And Mark Vetti joins me now. Hello there.
Yeah, g'day, Jesse. How are you?
Good. Hey, before we talk about the book and dogs, I just want to take a moment and acknowledge your dad, Gordon Vetti. It's the 40th anniversary of the Erebus disaster this year, and he was really instrumental in uncovering the true causes of the crash and making air travel safer for everyone. Have you got a second to remind listeners of the part your dad played in all of that?
You bet. Yeah, no, we've just done a podcast on that, so that'll be coming out in a little while. But looking at the whole scenario, but we were very, very proud of what Dad did. You know, he found the cause of the accident, and through the commission, you know, with Justice Mann, turned the air inspector's report around, and we're at blame pilot error, and of course demonstrated that that's not what it was. It was sector whiteout, and that they'd of course put the coordinates incorrectly into the aircraft and not told the pilot. So it was a really important finding, and literally, you know, every New Zealander has been affected by that accident one way or another, just about. So it's been a huge thing, and he died a couple of years ago, and so he's greatly missed, but he had a profound effect on air safety in New Zealand and the world, and very proud of the old boy.
Yeah, you must be really proud, and no thoughts of going into aviation yourself, except for teaching dogs to fly planes, of course.
Well, we all fly. I mean, my brother's a just retired captain of Cathay, and yeah, we're all pilots and aviators, so that's all part of what you have to be when you're a vetty, I suppose. But it's certainly an area that I loved, but animals beat it out hands down.
Yeah. And as you say, your father suffered a stroke 12 years before he died.
Then
I mentioned this, there's a big study published in the journal Circulation that suggests dog ownership can reduce the risk of death for people with heart disease by more than 21%. I wonder if you've seen this anecdotally in the 40 years you've been working with pets and their owners.
Oh, definitely. Not only anecdotally, I study that area as well. And basically, the effect, particularly of oxytocin is the bonding and what we call the love hormone. And so when you're working with your dog or interacting, just looking at your dog in the eyes, it stimulates oxytocin in both you and your dog. Oxytocin has a whole lot of positive, really positive health side effects. And it also stimulates dopamine and a number of other positive hormones that take you out of anxiety and into a positive state. We call it parasympathetic arousal, which is a calm, relaxed state, but like meditation. So so it's a very powerful effect, and we're starting to measure that. And definitely dog owners, not only with heart, but with a whole lot of other measures that we're measuring health-wise in humans, that has a huge effect, including increasing longevity by a couple of years. So it's a pretty important thing to that we bring, you know, this dog that's been with us for 40,000 years. That's really important to understand. 40,000 years they've been with us. No other species has lived with us like this, not even primates. You know, you think a chimpanzee is really close to us, but they're nothing like how close a dog is. Yeah, that's a huge effect and hugely beneficial.
So
something that I completely encourage, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about improving your health and getting a dog, Mark, is a puppy a good choice given the concern over puppy mills and all the adult dogs in shelters needing a home?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm certainly an advocate for, you know, you've seen with Pound Pups to Dog Stars. I mean, that show went global and had a massive effect, and people love to see dogs transformed, you know, that come out of rescue. And I encourage those, you know, I've got a book called Dog Zen, my earlier book that's really focused in on how to bring the dog, what I call, back to the den, back to their early foundations, and and re-establish the behaviours they need and change them. So it's certainly something I encourage, but probably not for the average, particularly the initial owner, not for the owner who doesn't have the real commitment and time. And really, most, I would encourage the average owner to get a pup at 8 weeks old, 7 to 8 weeks, which is the formative period. This is the time when 80% of the brain connects up and you wire in all their behaviours, the behaviours that you want, of course, which is what you should be doing. There's socialisation, their ability to relate to people, other dogs and other species are the most critical things they have to learn in that time. But also their house training, their ability to be alone, not be destructive. All of those types of things are all occurring and developing. The foundations being put in place between 8 and 16 weeks. So it's a very short window and it's a critical window. And I encourage owners to get their pups then, grab puppies in, because it's a week by week, laid out exactly the 8 things you should be doing every week to make sure that those things I just talked about are covered and nailed. And if you do that, you have a bond for life and you have a puppy that's well adjusted and can live in this weird and wonderful human world.
I remember when I bought my first car, Mark, and I had no idea what make to go for. Same choice with the puppy, right? How do you begin to think about which breed is right for you?
Yeah, well, that's really critical, and that's one factor to think about. That I go through all the other factors: size, exercise, the type of trainability the dog has. All of those issues are looked at carefully when you're selecting a pup, and you should do your homework. Get the book early if you can, and it goes through all of what homework to do and how to do it. And you're right, breed selection is absolutely critical. I see so many owners mismatched. A 75-year-old lady the other day with a great big German Shepherd, and I'm going, whew, we're going to have a job here, and we did have a job there. It was, they're a complete mismatch. And just getting the right pup for your circumstances, the size of your property, the type of activity level you have, all of those things, and then, what do I like in a breed as well? And that certainly should come into it. You want to be getting a breed that you like. But the beauty of it is there's 400-odd different choices, so you've got a huge selection out there. So that's good news and bad news. The good news is there'll be one out there for you. The bad news is make sure you don't get the wrong one.
Yeah.
But it's very doable, and I go into quite a bit of detail about breed selection. And I have templates there that you can tick and mark off.
If there's a few puppies to choose from when you go and pick them up, you want one that's sort of confident without being too much, right? And I guess you just learn to kind of pick the one that's going to be about the right temperament for you.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a template, a very detailed template, an easy to do template, but the template helps you to actually determine what you actually need and want and what suits your life, and then what the individual dog in the litter which one you should choose. It's good. That kind of outlines how to choose them, and that's an important choice. You don't want the very fearful one unless you've got extra skills. Take it if you know what you're doing, but it's going to be harder work, you want to start out having a pup that's genetically well established and good. You've selected a line and a breeder that's really good. We're encouraging, this is part of this book's written for breeders as well. So they do their first 3 to 8 weeks. They get the good foundations in place for you. So if you get a breeder who's got the book and is following what needs to be done, the job will be half done by the time you get it.
Great.
And that's what we're after. But you're right, it's certainly a matter of getting the right foundations in place at that time, and that's what we're focusing in on. I mean, when you think about it, 13,000 bites a year in New Zealand are completely unnecessary. If we do the right thing at the right time, we won't have bites in our community and we won't have behaviour problems at the level we have. You made that clear stat, 80% of the euthanasia in the first 3 years of a dog's life is due to behaviour problems, not medical problems. And so that formative period, and it is the time they're vaccinated, so you've got to be careful and you've got to make sure, but you've got to make sure they get socialised in that formative period.
You raised Hercules, the star of the Toyota Bugger ad, from when he was a pup. How is he a good example of what a dog can be if you get it right from the start?
Yeah, he's a great example, and the book outlines the compares Hercules to another dog, Charles, who ended up euthanated because he was a major behaviour problem, and it was a contrast between the two. Just I was lucky; I got Herc when he was 8 weeks old for the Hercules film. That's why we named him. We were doing the Hercules series at the time, Hercules and Xena, and so he was Hercules' own pup and dog, and so he had to learn lots of stuff very quickly, which was good for him. And so he got to do exactly what I'm encouraging you to do, is to generalize their socialization, expose them to lots of things. So he went on set and did lots of different stuff and learned a whole lot of obviously lots of behaviors. I think he had 150 commands on him by the time we got to, you know,
Amazing.
his and he, I think he did 50 odd movies and about 300 ads, so he was probably the most filmed dog probably in history, to be honest. He's a pretty was a pretty amazing dog.
I'm speaking with Mark Vetti, who's author of the book Puppy Zen, 8 Weeks to Train Your Pup and Create a Lifelong Bond. I've got loads of questions for him, but I also asked if you had anything you wanted to ask Mark. And Jenny's got a puppy who's generally happy but cries and whines when she leaves the room. She reckons she's doing most things right. And now everyone in her house knows that once he's fed and toileted and exercised, you just ignore the whining. But it is pretty distracting, she says. Any tips for her? Will the whining diminish over time?
It will, and she's making a generally a good approach, but there's a bit more to it. So the formative period, or the critical period for learning separation, which a dog has to learn, and it's important to understand that they've got to learn to be alone. I've got a case here. I'm training a dog as an empathy dog for a psychologist, and we rescued this dog, and it suffered chronic separation distress, which is what that is, and well, that would become if they leave it. And so I'm having to go back to basics on him. So one of the things we teach is we use a clip station, which is a little short lead, light chain lead, and we start in the crate and then we move to the clip station. And the clip station work is about doing graduated separation. So you clip them up for a short period of time, you know, might go away for a couple of minutes, and you come back and you click and reward him. I use a clicker as a major training tool because it switches them into a learning state. Uh-huh. It marks the behavior and you reinforce it with food. So it's about 10 times quicker to use a clicker to train a dog than any other way. And so what we're doing here is we're clicking and rewarding him for staying silent on the clip station, and we're going out and about and doing putting the washing out or doing whatever we're doing. And then so that happens for half an hour, and then you let him off and he can cruise with you, then you clip him back up. And so what you're doing is you're actively teaching him through what we call graduated departure. In other words, we're gradually systematically separating from us, click and rewarding him when we get back, so he's for silent quiet behavior, and then slowly working to extend his separation. So that's a really good way. Crate training is another good way. Both those things go together. And when you put him outside the door or put him outside, she's correct, don't let him in when he vocalizes or scratches the door, because you're reinforcing that behavior. So what we do is we wait till there's a quiet period, and as soon as he's quiet, you pop out there and let him back in. So quiet gets the door open, not vocalizing. And it's the same with releasing him off the clip station or out of the crate or out of the car, not when he's vocalizing, otherwise you're rewarding it.
It's funny, eh? Hearing you talk, so much of this reminds me of what you told as a young dad about how to deal with
exactly.
things. When you were raising your daughter, did you sometimes feel like
definitely.
You were putting a puppy through its paces?
It's undoubtedly the case. I mean, this, and it's something really important for people to understand. The critical period, or the formative period in humans, is 0 to 7 years, and even 0 to 3 is the most critical part of it. So it's a huge, long critical period. You know, we're a highly precocial, highly altricial animal. You know, we're dependent on our mothers much more than most species. So our critical period is very long. Dogs' critical period is between 1, 0, and 4 months, because in the wolf, when the migratory wolf's hunting, they hunt over large thousands of square kilometres. So they hunker down to have their young for 4 months. That's when the development has to happen, and it has to finish at 4 months because they're off on the hunt again. So that's why the formative period's so short in a dog, or relatively short. It's longer than other species, but it's short. So that's why when I say 8 weeks to train your pup, you get your pup at 8 weeks. It's finished its socialization at 4 months, so you've got 2 to 4 months to do your job, and that's why it takes 8 weeks to really socialize your pup. So it's different from a human, and so we think, oh, I've got the pup, oh, we'll wait till 6 months or a year, and we'll train it at some stage, you know. Do it at 2 to 4 months. That's when 80% of the brain is being connected up, and all of their behaviours are being established. Otherwise, you've got to unwire inappropriate behaviours and rewire new behaviours, which you don't want to have to do. I can tell you that's harder work. You saw on Pound Pups, that's exactly what we were doing. We're rewiring dogs' brains. That's not as easy by any means. Prevention's better than cure. Do it at the right time.
Here's one from Andrew, who's got a five-month-old mini schnauzer, so just outside of that formative period, but hopefully it's not too late. He's in Christchurch, and he says that his dog excitedly wheezes when he comes home. Any advice for dealing with that?
Yeah, that's a common one. There's two forms of that behaviour, and one's submissive urination, and the other one's excitable urination. So you come home, and the pup's really excited, and he waggles his bum and pees all over the ground. And it's a very common behaviour. And the other one is the dog shows submission, you know, and pees and rolls over. And so they're both kind of similar. They're slightly motivated differently. The good news is it's a very simple behaviour to change. So what I do is, the important thing to understand, it's an involuntary behaviour. And the message the dog's giving to you is, if you pressure me, I'll pee more. Well, the message is, I give up. You know, don't keep threatening me, or don't keep getting me highly excited, or I'll pee. And it doesn't have any control over that. So to take control over it, you've got to get the brain moving into the prefrontal cortex, making a decision. So you're asking the pup to make a simple decision like sit. So first of all, you teach the sit with a clicker outside of that context. So as soon as you come in, grab your pouch, have your pouch hanging up at the door. You put your pouch and your clicker on. You drop a piece of food on the ground before you even go near the dog. It goes and gets the food. You click. And when it comes up to you, you lure it with a food reward. It sees the food reward. You've taught it how to sit already. It sits, looks up at you. You click and reward before you touch it. And you do that three or four times. Now the dog's engaged. It's in what we call parasympathetic arousal, in that learning state, that peak happy, I want to interact with you state. And as soon as it's in that state and you click and reward it for that, you're now shaping non-peeing behavior, namely sitting, looking up at you into your eyes, and click and rewarding what I call the Zen sit. As soon as the dog looks at your eyes, it activates oxytocin and it stimulates learning state, and it won't pee in that situation. You keep marking that for the next few days, and within a week, the problem's sorted. Get them on the clicker, go onto online or onto the book and have a look at how I do it. It's very simple. I've got some videos there for them to follow, and a very simple behaviour to solve, but you've got to get stuck in and do it the right way or it won't solve, it'll get worse.
Love it. Hey, puppies seem to want to chew on everything, according to the emails and letters we've got. Is that just part of the territory?
Yes. Well, you've got to think about dogs, you know, and pups. They're an oral animal. They don't have hands, so they manipulate the world through their mouth. So it's normal, you know. So first thing to understand is oral, you know, chewing and nipping and all of those behaviours are natural behaviours. They're not necessarily appropriate and acceptable, but they're natural. And so you've got to train them to do the right thing rather than what will happen is they'll start to do their normal puppy thing, which would be hanging off your pants and jumping up and chewing on you and to grabbing your shoe and chewing it up. So all of those things require that the dog learns discrimination and also learns to the basics, which I do what I call a join up straight away, day one. You'll see I'm doing a tour around the country and you'll see me doing this. In 5 minutes, you've got the dog joined up. And that means it's probably learnt about half a dozen behaviours. Sit down, zen, look, heel. All of those behaviours and one join up is done. You can have the pup underway. Once you've got the join up going, then you start working on things like destructive behaviour. And so I teach them that toy is acceptable. That thing, the cushion and my shoe is not. Don't touch those. They bite. And I've got a little technique using what I call contrast training. And you can learn that. Just go to the book. It's very simple. I can teach them that in a day. You'll probably take a week, and you can sort out all that stuff very easily. And if you do that when they're young like this, then they learn that discrimination very simply, remembering you're wiring in their natural the behaviours that they're going to do. If you wire in shoes and cushions and things like that, a no-no, toys and balls and all of that are a go-go, they're fine. They know exactly what to do. Dogs can learn discrimination within minutes if you know how to teach it.
Finally, any tips for when you're taking the puppy out for a walk and strangers are coming up wanting to pet your puppy? Any sort of guidance for people on how to deal with that?
Yeah, that's a really critical one. I mean, that's what you must be primarily doing in the 2 to 4 month period. In fact, from right from 3 weeks old, if the breeder can get involved in it and have people coming in and interacting. So I use a meet and greet technique and a nicely command. So again, remember I've done the join up, so they're on the clicker. They've learnt this sit down and heel behaviours really simply. So when I go up to person, I say nicely to them. The dog sits. I click and reward it. I then hand a tidbit to the visitor. I say nicely, and I click, and the visitor hands the food to the dog. Click and reward, and I click and reward non-jumping up, 4 feet on the ground, meet and greet sociably, and within minutes, again, you'll have that social meet and greet going well. Remember, the first meet and greet is the critical one. That's whether it's a dog or another species or a human. The way it all goes on the first couple of times, particularly the very first time, is going to predetermine how that dog meets and greets and relates with that person or that dog in the future. So make sure your first one is orchestrated, simple, a little nicely routine meet and greet, click and reward the appropriate behaviours, job done. That he'll love that dog and that person for the rest of his life if you do it right at the start. So just a bit of work in that first couple of months, get those socialisation and meet and greets going. You say nicely to the dog keeps 4 feet on the ground, gets patted and handled by the visitor, no drama, everything goes nicely, setting the dog up to be a highly social, with a generalised socialisation to all different races. So one of the things we really focus on when we're doing human socialisation, different races, different age classes, little kids, babies, old people, as I said, different races, because that they can discriminate that as well. So they learn to accept all of those different people into their broader social group, into their family. And that includes cats, sheep, other things. I also do my cross fostering then, and you won't get your problem with predatory behavior where they're attacking sheep or cats or other things. If they learn to include those species and those races and those other dog breeds into their family group at that time, that's great. They'll have a broad social group, and their socialization will be what we call generalized.
Once again, you're echoing a lot of the advice we get for humans on this show, but the book is
oh,
called.
Definitely, definitely. It is exactly the same with a child, isn't it? You know, you've got to hand them over to people, and you've got to let them interact. And if you close them in and just look after them yourself, and they get very little social contact, the child will suffer separation distress. He won't want to be away from mum or dad. And therein is the start of a problem for life, So, again, it's a longer socialization period for children, of course. Nevertheless, the principles are the same. While they're in that peak learning state, which is what, of course, socialization, that formative period, is about, their nervous system is set up to be open and sponge-like at that time. And so that's when we learn those things, and that's when we should learn them. Think about languages, for example. And if you learn languages at the right time, or playing a musical instrument at the right time, it's a breeze. Leave it till you're 50, and it's bloody hard work, I can tell you. So, that's the principle. When the foundations are supposed to be being widened for that behavior, that's when you should do it. So I go through very carefully in this book as to exactly what and why those critical periods are there, and when they are, and when you should be focusing on that. And in each week, I have eight factors that I'm looking at, house training, separation distress, socialization, bite inhibition. So we're looking at each factor every week and going, you must do this week, just some basic stuff. Just make sure you do it. Then next week, I want you to do this. By the time you get to the end of your 4 month period, job done, well-adjusted pup. You've got a dog for life that's going to be so easy to do the rest of its work, whatever it needs to do.
Good stuff.
And that might be something specialist or not.
The book's
But
cool.
we're going to be down at the Wellington fair down there at the Pet
Pet and
Expo,
Animal
so come
Pet,
and see us.
Yeah, I've got the details here. Pet and Animal Expo Wellington. It's this Saturday and Sunday at Te Rauparaha Arena.
That's right.
And the book's called Puppy Zen, 8 weeks to train your pup and create a lifelong bond. Mark Vetti, thanks so much for your advice and help today. Nice chatting to you.
My pleasure. And I'll be doing a show at 1 p.m. So come and watch us, and I'll be at the Animo store. And so come and see me there, and we'll show you how the Animo works as well.